Morning. You're listening to Marvin Gaye, Trouble Man. Boy, he can tell a story. He was ahead of his time on that. Marvin Gaye, Trouble Man. Good morning. My name is James Boyd, and you're tuned in to Recovery Radio down in beautiful Bolivar, West Virginia. Really hot and humid day today. So I need for everybody to stay hydrated, especially those of us who are running around in the street trying to find that fix, trying to get their hands on something. Yeah, we need some sober intervention today. People are, just running around trying to stay cool and trying to hustle up enough money to do what it is they need to do today. And I hope everybody is safe and taking into account that it is very extremely dangerously hot on a day like today. But here in the studio, it's relatively cool. Good morning, John. How are you this morning? My engineer, John Case, is over there. He's a... getting ready to tune in.
Hello there.
Good morning, John.
The knobs are all turned on.
Yeah, they all turned on and headed in the right direction.
That's true.
Right, yeah.
And we're waiting for phone calls, is that correct?
Yeah, we're waiting on phone calls this morning. Now, young lady is going to be coming in this morning, Debbie. She's going to be talking about sober interventions and the outfit that she's involved with that believes strongly in help and not handcuffs. I think that's her calling in right on time. She locks it in. I'm really glad to hear from her this morning. Yes. Yeah, we... Good morning, caller. How are you this morning? Good morning.
Hi, how are you? It's Shane calling.
Hi, Shane. How are you? It's 9 o'clock on the West Coast, isn't it? Yeah, it's...
Well, 9:05, I was told to call in, and here we are at 9:04.
Man, it's really beautiful for people to be on time and in time. Good morning to you, Shane. What's the weather like?
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
It's funny you mentioned it's nice that people can be on time because...
Another caller.
We have another caller. Hold on a second.
Hold on, Shane. We're going to get... I'm hoping that's Debbie coming in. Good morning. How are you?
It's Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Shane. How are you?
Hey, Shane.
Yes. How's the weather? I appreciate you staying up or getting up so early because I know it's, like you said, 9:04, 9:05 out there. And here we're celebrating the afternoon after 12 o'clock. And it's very hot. Very hot. Yeah. So how about you guys one at a time? We're going to start with ladies first, Shane. Introduce yourself to our listening audience. Debbie, go ahead. You first.
I'm Debbie Gray.
And what is it that
you... Recovery Resources and We Care Path.
Yes. And Shane, would you introduce yourself to our listening audience?
Yeah, of course. My name is Shane. My last name is Ernie, and I work very closely with Debbie.
Okay. And so what are we, this morning, let's talk a little bit about what you all do in terms of sober services and intervention, and what is it that we can expect from your group, you know, this coming season, this winter season that's coming out. Now you go first, Shane. Tell us about what it is that you do.
You know what? I'm going to let Debbie go. She's in West Virginia. She's got her ear on the floor out there.
Yes, she does, and boots on the ground. So go ahead, Debbie.
Boots
it's
on
all
the
yours.
Ground. Yes, Debbie, please.
Okay, so we've migrated to My Recovery Resources, no longer Sober Services. We have changed some things, but the name is one of them. So we have two different platforms. My Recovery Resources is kind of just what it is. It's resources for anyone struggling with mental health and addiction, because typically those two things go hand in hand. We all know that. So we provide resources for anyone needing inpatient, outpatient, sober living, wraparound services, whatever that might be. For both mental health standalone and addiction with dual diagnosis, whether they have private health care, Medicaid, no coverage, we take their hand and walk them through getting into a reputable treatment program, whether that's inpatient or outpatient, as I said, because why would we focus on just people that have private insurance when there's so many people in need that don't know how to get help? So that's the first thing. That's My Recovery Resources. The second thing is that's coming soon, and it hasn't rolled out yet, but it's very soon. It's called We Care Path, and that is for the family members, because we know that this disease, mental health addiction, is a family disease. It typically starts from a parent who has trauma themselves and hasn't healed. They may not even realize that they have some kind of trauma. So, you know, the person's raised in the household, maybe the parents got divorced. Maybe it's just as simple as the parents separated or got a divorce. But to a child, that could be a devastating, traumatic event. So we are going to be offering family members the opportunity to log on to a regulated HEPA platform that will allow them to connect with their own master's level counselor to obtain their own support and their own healing, so that when their child or their loved one, their husband, spouse, whatever it may be, goes to treatment, they're also getting help via any electronic device, a phone, a tablet, computer, whatever it is, and they're going to have regular sessions with their master's level counselor, because the whole family unit must heal in order for someone struggling with especially addiction to get into permanent recovery.
Yes. Debbie, tell me, what is actually is wraparound services? Can you define that?
So I think we talked about this in one other time I was on your radio podcast. And the fact is that if you're a doctor, you're a dentist, you're an attorney, and you're struggling with addiction, alcohol, drugs, whatever it may be, it is a it's standard that they have a 5-year follow-up plan, that they have to be in treatment, outpatient, be seeing a therapist, for 5 years before they can obtain their license back. They must be subject to random drug testing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the wraparound things that needs to happen. I'm not saying it needs to be 5 years for every single person, because some people get it a lot sooner, but I think that it's a lifelong disease, and people need to be getting, they don't need to go to treatment and come home and stop. They need to come home from treatment and enter an outpatient therapist program. They need to be subject to random drug testing. They need to be in meetings. Whatever it is that works for them, they need to continue that continuum of care for much longer than when they walk out the treatment doors. That's number one. And then number two, let's talk about incarcerated population, that people are getting out of jail or prison after many months to a year in jail or years in prison, and they come out, they have nothing. They sometimes don't even have family in the area. We're setting them up for failure, just like we are those people who have been struggling with addiction or mental health for many years. They go to treatment. What do they come back to? They come back to a community that doesn't have anything to offer them. So we need to have sober living available for them, even if they have a felony.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be providing job opportunities to them, even if they have felonies. We need to be offering help, getting them their driver's license back, their getting a car, learning how to manage money, help in learning how to progressively get to the point where they're completely on their own and stable enough to work and live a healthy, productive life.
Now, that is amazing, because of the phraseology. The language is very, very important. You know, I was last night, Shane, I was reading some of your story, and it's really so much like my own. And I want you to talk to us a moment about the story I read in the Newsweek. And I really like the idea that you talked about something that's tailor-made for you. Can you tell us a little bit about your story, Shane, and how you got to the place where you are in recovery?
Of course. You know what? Here's the thing. I went to 5 or 6 different treatment centers. I gained education. I gained knowledge of the disease. I understood what it took. I just couldn't put that into my daily activity. For whatever reason. I guess the thing is this. My last episode, I was at a indigent men's detox,
mm-hmm.
where people would go that had no money and had no insurance. And that was my last stint in detox. And then I did 9 months at a very structured sober living. I guess what I'm saying is, we don't know exactly what's going to work for any one individual. We do our best by trying to guide families and their loved mm-hmm. ones to ethical, upstanding treatment centers that we feel in our hearts deliver what's needed for any one person to succeed.
Okay.
And with the rest, there's a lot of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we obviously ask questions like, you know, pre-drug abuse or pre-mental health issues with your loved one. What was their love? What was their passion? Did they like to fish? Did they like to walk? Did they like to ride a bike? Do they like to swim? I think that we lose that freedom of being a child with, you know, peer pressure and things like that. So my goal always when I'm working with family is try to get their loved one and even the family back to what just gave them pure happiness. And right. We lose that when we get older.
Yes. Yes. You know, I'm reading here. I want to read an excerpt from your story. It says that, by the way, your last name just makes me want to smile, because you've earned, in the short time that I've known you, your last name Earn, you've earned my respect. And it says here that Earn has survived his own struggle with addiction. And the part I want to hone in on is the next paragraph, the next statement. It says, fully recovered fully recovered, he established Sober Services 5 years ago to make the hope of lasting sobriety a reality for anyone suffering from drug or alcohol addiction. And my question to you, Shane, is what do you say to those who say that when you use something, when you say something like fully recovered, that you're living in denial? What do you say to those folks?
Fully recovered, living in denial. Listen, in the end, beyond the mental health issues and beyond the pain and the suffering and that the strong magnetic pull to some kind of relief, and that relief was always a pill or something that would take my mind elsewhere. But today I make that decision not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me today, the mental health, it's still there. You know, the illness is still there. It still hits me every now and then, and I have to look in the mirror and say, you're still crazy.
Yeah.
Just move on with your day, and everything's going to be okay. I guess people could look at fully recovered, whichever eyes, however you want to look at it with different eyes, it can mean different things to people. For me today, I make a decision, you know, not to pick up any drug or drink, and I try to be as nice and kind as possible to everyone I see at all times.
Yeah, you sound like my twin brother, because that's my testimony. You know, I Shane and Debbie, I look at a lot of the, on television, you see all the people coming out in their finery, their clothing, and I kind of like the tailor-made stuff a little better than the off-the-rack. And so I think point is, yeah, it's like, I want my pathway to sobriety, long-term sobriety, is just like yours. And it was tailor-made. And I had to decide for myself that I was going to put on a tailor-made jacket, and I put that off-the-rack jacket back on the rack. You know, and I think that what Debbie is teaching me and showing me along the way is that, you know, we need to institute an opportunity for people to have a tailor-made, you know, recovery path and some kind of resources and a rehab center. Tell me about some of your experiences, Debbie, in the incarcerated community, if you would.
Okay, one sec. Actually, as we speak, I'm sending an email to an attorney because the client has court at 1:00. So,
well, that's good. Well, can you stay on the line, and Shane and I will kick that whole idea around. Tell me about some of your experiences,
of course.
Shane. Debbie, you get right back with us when you can. Tell me about some of your experiences in the different rehab centers that you've visited.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you what I really like to maybe mention is that when we talk about the tailor-made and, you know, specific treatment for different individuals, it's a difficult task.
It is.
I think one important thing that we have to look at here is family involvement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, family involvement through history of mankind, family involvement is key to success.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, you're making your kids go to school in the morning, whether you tell them they need to go to college, you know, you lead by example. I think that's where we have to, you know, get stronger, to re-educate, you know, to re-educate, to reintroduce the parenting system back into our children, to let them understand a little deeper, you know, what today's 16-year-old or 17-year-old is going through, how the pressures from, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, basically I lived in a small town. I didn't see anything else. I never knew what a Mercedes was. I never knew what a Lamborghini was. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lived in Winnipeg. there are no Lamborghinis. there are no Ferraris. There are no Bentleys. There's nothing like that. I never knew what Prada was. I never knew what a red bottom shoe was.
Uh-oh.
So with the internet and with all of this communication and everything we have, the children and what they're watching today and seeing today, the pressure and the need to gather these items has become so strong. you know, not only for the children, but for the parents as well. It's become stronger and stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And I think with the family program that, you know, we've developed, we want to bring back and re-educate and realign values uh-huh. that perhaps we lost.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
100%.
100%, I would agree. Tell me, Shane, in your words, how do I live a happy life in recovery? How does Shane live a happy life in recovery?
I went back to what I learned from my grandparents. Up early, to bed early. Mm-hmm. Nothing good happens after dark. Mm-hmm. That's just the way life has always been. And it will continue to be like that.
He tells me that all the time.
Say that again? Can you repeat it?
He tells me that all the time. Shane tells me that all the time. Nothing good happens after dark. And he's right.
Yeah, and you know, and I see that a lot. I see that a lot because I do go out and visit with what I call, or what I was, one of the night people. And I put boots on the ground often out there on Winchester Avenue, down by 7-Eleven, where there's a lot of all the hot spots around Berkeley County. I haven't visited too many hot spots in Jefferson County yet, but just give me a minute. And I'm going to make contact with those folks. Yeah, this is a very interesting conversation, and I think it's one that is needed. For you, Debbie, since you are here and with boots on the ground, tell me, what is your biggest fear about all of the advocacy groups that seem to be going in 100 different directions here in the Eastern Panhandle?
There's no unity. What is the purpose? There's no education. So yesterday during my work day, I had someone stop by that's a friend of mine who's working with yet another group that's a good group. I'm not putting any group down whatsoever. I would never do that because we need help. We need mm-hmm. all forces. Mm-hmm. But there, you know, was putting on an event and wanted my feedback as to who would be good people to talk to maybe speak, to educate. To help educate. And what I'm seeing is that it's hard to say this, but what I'm seeing is that each of these groups has their own agenda. Mm-hmm. They're muddling their way through to help people. But where do they have any education? Are they going to continuing education? Like I do, like I go to a huge conference every year in Atlanta, and I learn from SAMHSA, CDC, DEA, mm-hmm. NIH. Do they have someone that's a peer to them, that is a counselor that can help them through things? What information do they have to educate the public? Do they have mm-hmm. the right information? Are they sending people to treatments that might be actively doing body brokering, which we've discussed, which mm-hmm. is actually a very harmful thing to people. It goes on a great deal in Florida. It's coming to an end, I hope, because there are task force in place. But what are they doing to help people if they don't even understand it themselves? And then secondly, and most importantly, I think of all of it, unity. Why do we have to have 20 pop-up groups and one well, our area is not very, we're not LA. Mm-hmm. We're a big area, but it's, we're more of a outlying suburb of Washington, D.C. and Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So why do we need 20 groups, each with their own agenda? Why don't we come together as one and all work together to help each other? So if a person needs a ride to treatment that doesn't have insurance to pay for that, or MTM to pay for Medicaid, why can't we cross bridges here and, you know, come together to help one another instead of saying, no, I can only do that for my client?
Yes.
That's what I see the problem being.
Yes, yes. You know, and I appreciate your humility, Debbie, because I know that you've experienced that firsthand, you know, me and mine and my group, and I know you've experienced that, and yet you still extended your hand. Not to get into too much detail, but that is exactly what
I'll
see.
I'll always do that.
Yeah, yeah. You still extend
I will
your
always
hand. Yeah, yeah.
Offer so, my help always. Yeah,
that is a good teaching moment, and I'm really proud to be just working with you and learning from you. And one of the things that I've learned in the last month that I've been working with you is that I got opportunity to do exactly what Shane shared with us about the family. I got a chance to talk to an inmate's family. Well, two of them, actually, their moms.
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, a girlfriend. And so with the 4 years, it's been about 4 years since I've been actually put boots on the ground and to become a part of the solution in our community. This is the first time. Yours is the first opportunity that I've had to actually do that and to go into the jail via email and telephone conversation and to be able to sit in the courtroom. And to say something on behalf of help, not handcuffs. And so that was like, it's just a sobering experience. And to me, it was like, you know, you all are like manna from heaven in this community of ours, because when you can get a person's attention when they're incarcerated, you know, and those connections are there.
Absolutely.
And I liken it. An analogy that I like to use is a U-turn versus a K-turn. In the U, you only have 2 points of contact. And in the K, I think there's probably 5 points of contact if you kind of put
Absolutely.
That down and look at it. And so I presented that on Saturday in the class that I'm taking. And, we're making our way into the emergency room. You know, Shane, this for you. How do you find in your area where you are, is this same thing going on about the patient brokering and the pop-up places where people seeking a treatment? Is that happening in your area, or is it West Virginia the only place?
The problem is nationwide. And again, people have a lot of different definitions for patient brokering or client mm-hmm. brokering or whatever they want to call it. There's never a need to pay somebody to get better.
Right.
If they're sick, they should go willingly.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, chances are it's not going to work.
Yes. I agree.
It's just as simple as that. Mm-hmm. We need the person to show up for themselves.
Yes.
Now, if we have people out there saying to this kid who's 19 or 20 years old, hey, I'll give you $500, stay there for 2 weeks. Well, we all know what that young person's going to do with that $500 when they get out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they die. I feel that's a case for murder.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that's a case for murder.
It is.
Murder. And they should be tried and they should be convicted.
Okay.
Because,
and they are, by the way.
You know,
they are.
And they are, and they're
and they
starting.
Are.
And if we hear about anything like that, of course, you know, we let the authorities know immediately. It hurts my heart that these kids, you know, are making this, you know, into a business. You know, they're going to rehab for a few months, they're getting paid, they're taking off a few weeks and doing drugs and, you know, going through the system again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. And so Shane, in your journey, did you have to find somebody that you could trust to, you know, kind of walk with you? Like some of the clinicians?
I had a few mentors when I came in. I guess the most difficult for me was just understanding why I have to pick up a cigarette off the floor or why I have to help so many people for no reason. And just real simple things that I could never understand. It never added up to me. I was more... I wasn't scientific, but one-on-one always made two. And then when they said, pick up a cigarette butt because you're going to become a better person and stay sober, I couldn't understand the end game. So until I finally just let go and I said, you know what, I'm going to give a year of my life up. I'm living terrible anyways. I'm just going to give it up. And I just gave up my life to another human being. And I listened to everything they said, no matter what. And I did it. And that was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the thing is this. Become a third party to your life. You know, and I try to teach this and let families know this as well. If you're a family member and you have a child that's an addict, become a third party to it. Don't make any decisions on your children. If they ask for money, you say, hang on a second, Jimmy. Hang on. I want to give it to you. I do, but I don't know if I should. Let me make a phone call. Call someone like Debbie.
Yes.
Call a therapist. Call a friend. Call anybody and say, hi, my son is asking for $50. What should I do? And they're going to say, you know what? Don't give it to them, because here's what's going to happen. And then that allows you as the parent to go back to your son and say, son, I love you so much, but so-and-so told me that I'm not allowed to give this to you.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it eases the tension between family and loved one, and you become a third party. And that's the same when you're an addict, I think. Become a third party to yourself. You know, don't make any decisions for yourself. Allow someone else to do that.
Yeah, you know.
At least for 1 year. At least for a year.
Yeah. At one of the greatest moments in my life after I got clean or after I, you know, got myself together, I was at a theater, and I went to see Tyler Perry, and something happened on stage, and everybody went, ah. So with what you just said, you know, become a third party, you know, I think it merits an that is amazing. And a statement I read that you said, as long as the client stays in touch, I tell these people I'm in their life forever. And that's sort of what we learn as a recovery coach.
100%.
Go ahead, Debbie.
100%.
Yeah. As a recovery coach, we learn that piece. So there are things happening that are good. It's just that we have to wade through so much, or, you know, it seems that we have to wade through so much. But I just don't think that waiting, you know, is part of what's going on now in my life. You know, I think that, you know, God is raising up a standard, and he's sending people my way, because at one point, maybe 6 months ago, I was just exhausted, and I didn't see that we were getting anywhere, because I'm a part of, I don't know if it's, I'm going to say 10 different advocacy groups here in the Eastern Panhandle. And everybody seems to be doing the same thing. We're having meetings. And Debbie took me and gave me an opportunity to make a connection, a real connection, and something that is sustainable. And even though I went through a traumatic event this past week in court, and Debbie knows what I'm talking about, the person that I was trying to help thanked me, even after we got the worst possible outcome in my mind.
Mm.
Yeah, he reached back and said, thank you so much. You did everything you could. You know, I don't know if I would have been that gracious if they carted me back off to jail. So I really appreciate it.
You know what? Hang on a second. I need to interrupt you, because, see, that's what makes the difference. That person is going to be sitting incarcerated now, knowing that he has you on his shoulders, or that, you know what I
that's
mean?
Right.
You're in his corner.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you
that's
something,
right.
on those dark days that they're saying, I want to die, you're going to pop into that guy's mind, and he's not going to pull the trigger, or he's not going to take that pill, or he's not going to get into that fight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we save lives. See, it's not so much about the outcome, because 90% of the time we don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, and you saying, and by the way, James, I'd just like to say that you're doing an absolutely amazing job.
Thank you.
Attorneys are very grateful for your help as well, because they're not social workers, they're attorneys. They're very grateful for your help. You're doing an amazing job. And the young man that you helped, I can guarantee you, when he gets out of incarceration, serving his time, he will reach out to you for help.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee it, because you bonded 100%. With him. Yes, and you've shown him that there truly are people other than his immediate family or friends. There are people in the community that truly care about his well-being.
Mm-hmm.
He will call you.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.
100%. And James, I want to tell you something. The system is broke.
Yes.
We talk about recovery. We talk about saving lives. If you had a heart specialist, and that heart specialist sat down next to you and said, you know what? You know what, James? I can operate on your heart, but here's the deal. 8 out of 10 of my clients, they don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make it. Not all of them die, but you're not going to be able to run. You might not be able to walk. You might not be able to even get out of bed. Only 1 or 2 out of 10 are going to maybe live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how discouraging is that?
Very.
We would not, as a community, as a nation, we would not accept those statistics. And yet in recovery, 3 to 7 to 10% success rate has been acceptable for years.
Yes.
Exactly. Mm. And that needs to change.
It's sickening. It's completely sickening. People are pointing fingers at body broking. People are pointing fingers at the drug addict. People are pointing fingers at the internet, how you can get drugs online. People are pointing fingers at the dealers. People are up in arms about, but the system's broke. Let's point a finger at the system, at the system, at the treatment system. And that's right from the top, from government down. It's completely broken. Medicaid, Medicare, state insurance policies. The whole system is broken.
It is.
And yet we want to point fingers because we have these people who want to sit on a pedestal and scream and point a finger at the dope guy. Mm-hmm. They want to point a finger at the body broker. But I'll tell you something. At least that body broker, now I'm just saying at least they're getting a client into a treatment center.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, if that treatment center was doing its job, or if society as a whole was doing its job and treatment was more efficient and it was 80% success rate, there would be no body brokers.
Right. So we got the you. We got the you.
The client would get paid one time to go into treatment for 14 days. The miracle would happen and he'd go home and have a happy life.
Yes.
But that's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to say that for me, it was after 7 rehabs, it was after rehab, then what? You know, after jail, then what?
There you go. And there you go. There you go.
And so
there you go.
Yeah. I'm inspired to kind of look ahead and create a then what, because that is what helped me to stay stopped. You know, I had to come up with a then what, but everybody's, like you said, there's a percentage of people who are not going to be able to do that for themselves, you know.
100%, 100%. But let's face it, there's a lot of land in West Virginia. There's mm-hmm. a lot of land in that panhandle you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's places where, listen, we can get together. We could develop some kind of a self-sustaining community that maybe makes, you know, grows vegetation or makes a product or mm-hmm. something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where, you know, we could actually work and try to get back to basics and you know, re-inspire people through love and commitment. I don't know. I'm rambling.
No, that's good. Human decency is coming across loud and clear. Human decency.
What he's saying is it's getting back to the grassroots of it all, like getting back to where it needs to begin and then where it needs to continue after a person gets treatment. There needs to be systems in place, not correctional systems, but community support, unity and community support, and just there needs to be wraparound services, and the family is the number one key player in that wraparound care.
I agree.
They need to have their own help.
I agree.
And I
go back to a statement that I really love. I tell these people I'm in their life forever. And that is a powerful, that is so powerful. That's so moving. That is so, for me, it's like put up or shut up.
I can't even take credit for those words, because those words were taught to me by a mentor of mine named Casey Homer, who I met here in Southern California, who was one of my mentors. God bless him. Those are his words.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that. I learned that, and that's what this is. You follow the person in front of you. You learn. You see what they did. This is not rocket science.
Yeah,
it's difficult, and it's very powerful. This mental health issue and the attraction to some kind of relief is almost impossible to stop. But it is possible because people have done it. Many people have done it.
Yes.
And
yes.
Listen, I cried 6 months. For 6 months, I cried every day, 3 to 5 times a day, every day. That's what it took for me to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
Begging God, at least, my goodness, at least, I don't know, 500 times, saying, God, please. That's all I said, God, please. Please, God, please, please,
Send somebody, yes. Yes, I did that. I did that as well, Shane. And then God sent me my wife. And
see,
the true story, by the way, I tell these people I'm in. You know, and it takes the testicular fortitude to be able to say that and mean it and stick with it. So, you know, my hat off to whoever your mentor is, and my hat off to you and Debbie. Oh my goodness! I mean, I just. Sometimes I feel so bad because, you know, I get tired and exhausted and I lay down and go to sleep, turn my phone off, and if I get up and go and turn it back on, she's still on the phone with people.
I know. I have to force her to go to bed sometimes.
He does. That's my addiction. So that's on me. I'm trying to put in place healthy boundaries for myself, and I have been trying to take some me time on the weekend. So, James, that's an issue. That's not a good thing. It's an issue for me that I'm working on.
Well, so, I'm going to try and be better. So let's switch gears for a moment. This is for you, Debbie. I hear you got some things coming up, things that are, you know, in there that's coming up for our community. Talk to us a little bit about what your ideas are and what your plans are. In terms of
Shane, is
activity.
It okay to share the
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
Go ahead, yes.
Okay, so Ken Seeley Communities. Ken Seeley is one of the interventionists off of the Series A&E intervention. And Shane has met with him, and he believes wholeheartedly in what Shane's ideation for recovery is. And so what we want to do, he's very he has extensive recovery just like you, James.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he just hit 29 years on July 14th
mm-hmm.
in recovery. And what we're going to do is we're going to have him come and meet a sit-down dinner with in our community, hopefully in October, to meet with governors and mayors of the state of West Virginia and the judicial system to explain why it's so important for individuals to get help over incarceration and to explain why it's so important for there to be community unity. And then we're going to
family involvement.
And it's 100%. And not like these just separate groups each doing their own thing, but let's come together to be involved and provide help. And then secondly, we're going to do a 10K walk through Martinsburg because we all know that's called Little Baltimore for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ken will walk that route, and we will choose some individuals who will write in to explain why they would like to have 10 minutes with Ken Seeley. And we'll choose a few of those who will be allowed to, I won't say allowed, they're going to be able to walk with Ken along the route and discuss their loved ones, whatever.
Or anything they want. Yeah, anything they want to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah,
whatever they want to discuss. So, yeah, I mean, maybe they have an idea that they want to talk to him about that they think would be a good idea. So anything they want to discuss about. So, yeah, we're going to do that because we feel like he's a good, solid person in recovery. He does a lot of things. He's got an ethical board where he can have a clearinghouse go into treatment centers to go through all of their records and auditing and certify them mm-hmm. to be an ethical treatment center, and that's an important role. So we want to bring awareness, community unity, involvement, and information to the judicial system.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a timeline for that?
Hoping we're looking
October 5th. Yeah.
Okay.
James, yeah. the whole goal of, you know, searching for a person such as Kent Seeley to come to a community mm-hmm. like Martinsburg. Let's face it. Some states are hit worse than others. There's mm-hmm. a lower level of income. There's less jobs. More things happen. And these communities, I don't want to say, well, yeah, I will. Let's say they're forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear them in the news every now and then, but they're forgotten about. What we're trying to do here with Mr. Seeley and his group is we want to shine a spotlight in that corner of the country, and we want to get rid of the cockroaches.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what we're looking to do, and we're looking to do that through, just like Debbie said, community unity. Everyone is invited. Everyone mm-hmm. is able to join this. We just want everyone to come together and make things better. For what I call these war-torn communities.
War-torn, yes.
War-torn, Little Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's enough already.
Yeah.
So after speaking with Ken and sharing what Debbie does out there and how much she's grown and helping and going into the jails and the institutions with the lawyers and judges calling her, we thought it was a great place to start with the first annual Ken Seeley 10K walk for mental health and substance abuse.
All right. Yeah, that's exciting. I like that. We're moving the ball forward here. Yeah, I agree with that.
That's the thing. Like you said, there's a lot of meetings. There's a lot of talk. We want to try to take a little bit of action here
mm-hmm.
and make it a community involvement.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe that everybody's well-intentioned. It just takes a lot. It takes everybody. And one of the things that I read on Ken Seeley, and the same thing you talk about, Shane, is a family team meeting.
Yes.
I like that concept,
yes.
The entire family,
yeah.
a team meeting, because some of the young men and one young lady that I talked to and that's incarcerated right now, they talked about not having the family support. And one of the things for me was when I was actively using, I burned a lot of bridges. So I use the word pontifex on myself and my treatment. For me, is I build those bridges back to my family, back to my community. I connect back into people every day. And, you know, I often talk about, which is a conversation piece, is that my clean time is I do it in days. And so I have a little over 8,000 days now and counting. And, you know, I get people to kind of do the math. You know, you do the math. And so I'm connecting. Actually, on today at 2 o'clock, I'm being installed as one of the newest board members for the United Way. And I shared that with Debbie. Yeah. And I'm connecting back into the community. And one of the homework assignments
good
that we
you.
Got over the weekend is to go into a place, a business, whatever it might be, and ask them how they feel about recovery coaches. And get some feedback in the community. So I have many places that I can visit. Yeah, so any closing thoughts before we close out?
Yeah, go ahead. I want to say something about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about families, and you're right, we burn a lot of bridges being an addict or an alcoholic or mentally mm-hmm. unstable. We do, and those loved ones, you know, sometimes they cut us off. Sometimes mm-hmm. they say, no, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is this, and you know this, I'm sure, forgiveness is the key.
Yes.
Even forgiving a man who murdered your child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's many cases where those people go into the court and they forgive that person, and it's incredible. It's strong. That's the key. Forgiveness is the key when we're dealing with family and reopening our hearts.
Yes.
Just, we always have to find forgiveness.
Yes.
Always, no matter what.
Yes. And it's needed after however many years. Yeah, yeah, I appreciate that. What about you, Debbie? Any closing remarks?
Honestly, I'd just like to say thank you for your help. It's in your spare time, and I think you're doing a great job in all avenues within our community, James. And you're an enhancement to what we are trying to accomplish. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, James, and thank you. God bless you. I really appreciate it.
And thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Okay, well, I thank you, folks, and don't be strangers. You know, one of the things I want to say to you both is, Shane, you know, I don't believe in happenstance. The statement that you just made about forgiveness and the timeline on it. I talked to a young lady just last week that I hadn't seen in over 20 years, and she lost her leg from the hip down due to intravenous drug use. They had to remove her leg. And I talked on the phone, and I was telling her about Recovery Radio, and I wanted her to come on and share her story. So I asked her a question. I said, Gail, when did you actually started using heroin? And she replied, when you gave it to me, James. And it just floored me, because I realized that I was the one who turned her out. So the next, or one of the upcoming shows that I'm going to do is... I'm going to put the question out there. How many people did you turn out? And see if
real can... powerful. That's a crazy, crazy story.
Yeah, yeah. I had to think back.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and so that was me. Mm. And so with that, I bid you adieu and stay out of the sun. And Debbie, I will talk to you real soon. And Shane, you be
Sounds
blessed.
Good. Thank you, James.
And thanks for coming on, guys. Thank you so much. Great show.
What do you want to play? What do you want to go out with?
Marvin Gaye.
Okay.
Trouble Man.
Hey, we'll let it sweat, babe. Come up hard, babe. Now I'm fine. Checking trouble, sure. Hey, move.